You're listening to the Fantasy 411 Podcast. Now here are Mike Ciano and Corey Schwartz.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411 Podcast Showgram Extravaganza. Mike Ciano, along with Corey Stats Schwartz, a special guest, joining us in just a moment. But first, some housekeeping. Fantasy411.mlblogs.com is the place to go for two start pitchers, pitch or ditch, and maybe a little sage advice from the Goose if he's in the mood. And the Goose, you can follow him on Twitter, at ZachMLB. You can follow the great Fred Zinke, at Fred Zinke MLB. Corey, political rants can be found at Schwartzstops.
Not anymore.
Nope. Oh, you're a good boy now?
No, I'm back on the straight and narrow.
I don't read you on Twitter anyway. So I'm at the Cap 23. I don't tweet either, so you're all right there. But the general account is the most important, at Fantasy 411. And hello to the crew on the other side of the glass, as always. We have a special guest, like I said, joining us in a minute to talk about the draft. He is the godfather of fantasy baseball here at MLB.com. But Corey, I'm also looking forward to talking about another podcast that you're now on. So get ready to discuss.
I'll refer to it. Yeah, I will.
Yeah,
I actually have a specific point to make referring back to that. So this is really exciting. People must be wondering what we're talking about right now.
And you know, anytime Corey can talk about himself, it's going to be electric. So stay tuned for that.
Listen, there's no topic I know better.
You're the best. You're the best at talking about yourself. But first, let's get to our guest. He's on the way to the airport to his private jet back to Pittsburgh. He has his own airport in Squirrel Hill, out in beautiful, beautiful suburbs of Pittsburgh. And that, of course, is Jonathan Mayo. Jonathan, what's your, what's your Twitter account again?
Wow, really? That's how you're bringing a guest?
Jonathan Mayo B3.
That's how I operate. That's how
Jonathan
we operate.
Mayo B3. Big ball,
that's
beautiful.
Right. Jonathan Mayo B3. That's right.
There you go. The only thing I'm going to correct you about is that Squirrel Hill is within the city of Pittsburgh. It's not a suburb.
Oh, so it's in the city limits?
Yeah, so the zoning issues for the private airport, that was a huge hurdle to jump over.
Yeah.
So do you have your own private incline from the city up to your house in the hills?
Yes. Yes, a vernacular, if you will.
That's right, a vernacular. That's a great word.
Is that what they call those things?
Yeah.
I thought it was called an incline.
Well, it goes up an incline.
That's the layman's term. Those of us who know what we're talking about call it a vernacular.
Ah, there you go. See, I am a layperson.
Those familiar to the burg.
Yeah.
And especially those in the city limits, like Jonathan Mayo. So you're on your way to the airport. Three busy days of draft madness, and you know whenever fantasy players watch the draft and all the hoopla and see all these players, and you know it was a great night on Monday night. Good job out of you, by the way. And then a lot of stuff
going on
Tuesday and Wednesday, of course, on the site with the draft being exclusive, but. The fantasy players who are very selfish and only care about themselves, as they should, always wonder, well, did somebody get drafted that, you know, is a great pickup? Maybe not necessarily for this year, but we do know what happens, like Brandon Finnegan. But more importantly, you know, maybe somebody next year who I could get in a keeper league. So did anybody jump out to you that we really, really need to know about to help fantasy teams, especially in keeper leagues?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you start with guys at the top of the draft in general, and there were a few guys that shouldn't take all that long to get to the big leagues. Now, whether or not they have, like, huge fantasy impact right out of the chute, that remains to be seen. I mean, even Brandon Finnegan, that was a great story, and it contributed to the Royals making it to the World Series, but it's not like he did much to help a fantasy team down the stretch. So the guy who sort of most fits his MO probably would be Tyler J, the left from Illinois, whom the Twins took, and mostly just because, it depends on what his role is going to be, but it seems like short-term they're going to let him relieve this summer and then develop him as a starter after that. And, you know, the Twins are hanging around and competing. I could see a similar type of thing where he gets up and, you know, I think he will start long-term, and that's where his value would be fantasy-wise anyway, because I don't think he's a closer if he ends up relieving. Probably the guy who has the most fantasy value overall will help in the shortest term outside of some of the, you know, maybe Carson Fulmer, another pitcher, is Dansby Swanson, the guy who went number one overall. I don't think it's going to take him that long to get to Arizona, and I think he should be helpful kind of across the board in some stats. You know, he can be a shortstop who they hit 15 homers a year and steal 15 to 20 bases a year, and there aren't that many of those that play that position.
Yeah, Jonathan, from a general trend, it seems like the college pitchers are the guys that move the fastest. do teams tend to draft that way purposefully, or is that just because they can take those pitchers and move them into specialized roles, whereas a hitter has to be more of a complete type of player to make the move from the draft up to the majors?
Well, I think at the top of the draft, you know, or throughout the first round, you're not necessarily taking a guy, you know, solely because, oh, well, he might be able to help us out this, you know, this year. You know, the stars were kind of aligned for Finnegan last year, and Jay is really the only player that I could see that happening with this year. Carson Fulmer and Dylan Tate have relieved in the past, and, you know, the Rangers suddenly are hanging around, so I guess that could work for Tate, and the White Sox climb back in the AL Central. Maybe they'd want to do that with Fulmer, but he's thrown a lot of innings, so I'm not sure if that would work. So, you know, I don't think that's, you know, it's the same reason why you don't draft for need that high up. I think it just happened that, especially this year, the three best pitchers in the draft were all guys who had that, well, maybe he's a relief pitcher kind of MO to them.
Yeah, and I mean, and we, you know, everybody knows this. It's been obvious. Every name we've mentioned, you know, Finnegan and other guys in the past, you know, they're usually middle relievers. I mean, it's pretty easy to take a guy and who throws hard and who's you know, older, if he's a college pitcher, obviously, and insert them into a situation where you could limit the amount of damage they can cause. And if it works out like it did with Finnegan last year, then great. But in the end, I think Finnegan does. You know, even though it was very, you know, small sample size last year, even though it was on a big stage, you know, it caused me to draft him in a keeper league this year. You know, right. With knowing that he probably would be in the minors to start the season, and it probably would take a little time for them to figure out if he was going to stay up as a reliever or go down and get stretched out. And it was the latter. He's getting stretched out now as a starter, so I feel much better about the pick. But I don't. There's no way I draft Brandon Finnegan this year if he wasn't in the big leagues last year. Yeah. So there is that, you know, secondary impact.
Yeah, I mean, because so often the guys in the draft, I mean, even if you're in keeper leagues, they're a little bit out of sight, out of mind. You think they're a few years away. And all those pitchers that I mentioned, I mean, Carson Fulmer, even if he's, you know, doesn't pitch much this summer and is just developed as a starter next year, I could see, like, within a year him being big league ready. And who knows? I mean, the team that took him has Carlos Rodon in the big leagues now. They brought Chris Sale up, so clearly they don't have a problem getting guys up to the big leagues in a hurry if they seem ready. Fulmer is probably one of those guys that wouldn't take that much time developmentally, even as a starter, to be ready to get big league hitters out.
What about in dynasty leagues, Jonathan? Who's the guy who's maybe a high schooler or you know, something like that, who might need a few years to develop, but looks like the high ceiling player in the draft that you really want to stash away now in those really deep dynasty leagues?
Well, that's Brendan Rodgers. Yep. You know, that's not a huge surprise. He was number one on our rankings throughout. Still think he's got the highest ceiling and all around tool package and the best all around tool package of anybody in that class. The idea of seeing him hit in Coors Field should be enticing to anybody who can, you know, stash him and hold on to him for a while. Kyle Tucker, the Astros took at number five, is another guy in terms of the high school performers that I think is going to do quite well. And he's got a pretty advanced field to hit. He may be one of those high school hitters that doesn't take a ton of time to get up to the big leagues. And he's a better player than his brother is, and his brother can swing it a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt.
And, you know, and it was. I think it was really apropos, as they say, that Correa makes his debut the same night of, you know, day one of the draft, former number one overall pick by the Astros. And you see, you know, listen, it still took a couple of years. I mean, yeah, he got to the bigs quick, but even in a dynasty league, if you picked up off the waiver wire Carlos Correa 2 seconds after he got signed, you still have to wait 3 years for him to, you know, put a stat up on your team. So to you, is that a good base timetable, like an average? You know, they're going to get there quick, but if it's an offensive high school player, you're still looking at least 2.5-3 years?
I think, I mean, that's probably the under. I mean, you think about how young he is. I mean, he was young coming out of the draft, but 3 years for a high schooler, that means he's probably getting to the big leagues by age 21. Mm-hmm. You know, there aren't that many 21-year-olds in the big leagues. I know guys are getting to the big leagues faster than it seems than they used to be, and you've got the Mike Trouts and the Bryce Harpers of the world. But I think that even with like Correa getting there in the time that he did, first of all, it took a lot less time than anyone expected for him to get there. But I don't know what the numbers are now, but I would say that at least 4 years for a high schooler is probably more in the average range.
It always makes me laugh when we have these kind of conversations about guys who just got drafted out of high school about what kind of major leaguers they'll be. And then I think about what I was doing as an 18-year-old and how long it took me to turn into anything resembling a worthwhile human being, which arguably hasn't happened yet.
You're still a work in progress.
Yeah, exactly.
The average on that for Corey is 22 years.
Yeah, and counting. So, then we start talking about, Brendan Rodgers, in 3 or 4 years hitting in Coors Field, I'm like, wow, I did something wrong somewhere along the line.
yeah, but that's the job of the scouts that work so hard that's what they're trying to look at. They're like, all right, what kind of big leaguer is he going to be? And for them, it's not as important. You take Brendan Rodgers, you're not concerned about how quickly can he get to the big leagues, but you're trying to project 4, 5, 7, 8 years down the road and say, all right, who can he be? What can he become when all is said and done?
All right, Jonathan, we know you you have an old-fashioned waiting for you on that private jet to Squirrel Hill, so we're going to let you get back to that. great seeing you. We'll talk to you again soon, especially as we get closer to right before or after trade deadline when we see if any of these kids changed hands or got called up and all that good stuff.
Sounds good.
All right, safe travels, my friend. Jonathan Mayo, everybody. At Jonathan Mayo B3.
Yeah, that's right. And Jonathan's article talking about some of these guys is up on MLB.com right now. Good stuff. Gets into depth about the situation and the skills of some of these players. So go check out that article on MLB.com.
All right, we still have to get to news and notes. We have to get to your Twitter machine questions. And we still have to talk about a new podcast now available in the MLB.com universe. All right, so let's get to that podcast stuff. That I wanted to talk about. I did listen to the first 10 minutes, mm-hmm. and then I was distracted by my job.
The beauty of my voice?
No, your voice was great. And
thank you.
So coy. Let's just get it out there.
All right, so there's a new StatCast podcast. I'm sure everybody by now is familiar
StatCast.
StatCast, the player tracking system, the ball tracking system, the base runner and fielder tracking system that we've rolled out league-wide this year. Mike Petriello, who's writing some great stuff on the site, is the host of that podcast. And I was merely a guest, Mike. I was merely a guest on that first podcast.
I would give yourself a little bit more credit. And the fact that you... The fact that you had an opportunity to really pump yourself up and chose to be humble really shows your growth.
Well, thanks. Like we said, 22 years and counting. Really, it was the reason I was the first guest on that show, and I was the guest, and Mike is the host, and he's going to have a lot of really smart people in the business getting on that podcast, is because, look, I've been around a long time. I've been around since the beginning of MLB.com and know a little bit about the history of how we got from, our first sort of, formative years all the way out to this tracking system as we're doing right now. It reflects, obviously, the growth in the company, the growth in the technology. The technology that we wanted to implement back in 2001 and 2004 and whatever took time to evolve. We saw PitchFX only sort of make its debut during the 2006 postseason, and it's gradually evolved and become a part of baseball now that you can't watch a game anywhere, mm-hmm. on TV, on a device, in the ballpark, wherever. You expect to see that pitch data in the broadcast, in the game depiction. And we think that over time, StatCast will become that same thing, that it will really add to that experience. So I was just trying to provide a little bit of that overview of where we've come, where we are now, and where we hope to go.
Yeah, and I think the most interesting part, I know you had a guest, you had Zach Day.
Yep, Zach Day, former major league pitcher who works for TrackMan now, who's one of our vendors on the system.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, Zach.
That he worked for them.
They call Zach the pitch spin whisperer because, he's the guy, first of all, he works for TrackMan. He's immersed with the data. He really understands what the data means. But also as a major league pitcher, he understands how that helps you as a pitcher, what you can do with these tools. And it's good to have people like that on the show and on the podcast. And as I said, Mike is the host. It's his show. But I've seen some of the early names that they're trying to get lined up, and it's going to be really cool stuff. Talking it, from a practical matter, what does this data mean? But what matters to our podcast, there will be things that are relevant from a fantasy standpoint. We're going to get to an example of that a little bit later in our podcast here today.
Okay, yeah. So please check that out. If you go to the iTunes store, I'll tell you exactly how I did it. I just went to iTunes, went and searched. I just put StatCast in there.
Bang.
One word.
Done.
And hit search, and it popped up. I clicked on it. I subscribed to it. I downloaded it. I listened to it.
And you learned from it.
And I did learn from it.
That's really
what
it's all about.
I did learn from it. I thought it was fantastic. Mike, like you said, Mike does a good job, did a good job hosting, and you were fantastic.
I'm really, in all honesty,
and I'm not being mean here, I'm looking forward to the future of it because it's easy to do the 101.
Right.
Right, which is what the first podcast was. It's easy to do the 101. You can just explain everything which you did so well, in all seriousness. But I'm looking forward to where you guys take it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's, again, this is nothing to do about me. The reason I was the first one is that I sort of provided the overview of the system. That's sort of the evergreen podcast that can always sit out there.
It's the pilot.
Right. As we go forward, Mike is going to be able to get guests on there that are topical and talk about what's going on with players right now, what we're learning about the data today, what are the trends we're seeing. And I'm going to keep teasing. We're going to talk about one of those examples really soon.
You're doing a great job with the tease.
It's a huge tease.
All right, news and notes. We already did the segment with Mayo. So moving over to bullet point two.
Yes.
And we did mention this with Jonathan, and I thought that was really interesting about when a high school player, a hitter more specifically, is taken, what should you expect if you're a dynasty leaguer, you know, as far as getting some, you know, return on your investment. And of course, it's all about Carlos Correa, who did make his debut on Monday. His first hit will be an infield single, so he got to show some wheels.
Right.
And then he made a nice play in the field. And then just a few days later, he does across the board with a homer and a steal in the game. So what do you think about him just from a fantasy angle? Because Jonathan gave us analysis, but you didn't. And then we can move on to the who's next.
You look at the numbers Correa put up all throughout the minor leagues. Not only did he put up huge numbers, he did it as one of the youngest guys at every single level. You know, there was a note that Bryce Harper faced Jacob Lindgren of the Yankees last night, who was a draftee last year. That was the first time in Bryce Harper's major league career he's faced a pitcher younger than himself.
Jacob Lindgren.
That may be true of Carlos Correa for a while, too, because he's still only 20 years old, I believe. Yep. To be able to compete at the major league level at 20 years old, we've said this many times, the earlier you get to the majors, the greater the likelihood you become a superstar, and Correa has all those signs. I don't want to make a trite comparison because you always get killed doing stuff like this, but Correa reminds me so much of Jeter. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously because of his height as a shortstop, you know, a tall shortstop. You know, Jeter had sort of that outside, inside-out swing designed to drive the ball the other way and then could power up on a ball. Correa is more of a pure power hitter, I think. But he also has that sort of coolness about him. You know, watching bits and pieces of his first couple of games, in every batter-pitcher matchup, you think in one of two things. Wow, how's this pitcher going to get this guy out? Or how is this hitter going to manage to do something against this pitcher? So far, when you watch Correa hit, you're like, how's the pitcher going to get this guy out? And another interesting thing for me is that last night in Correa's third game, he batted fifth ahead of Chris Carter.
Yeah.
Now, that in and of itself is not a huge big deal, but with a lefty pitcher up there, they put Correa ahead of Chris Carter, who is a lefty masher, right, a league average hitter at worst, and a lefty masher. Mm-hmm. And they had Correa hitting ahead of him. That really tells you what they feel about this guy as a part of their team, not only for the future, but right now. Right. So he's available in a couple of NFBC leagues. I know main event leagues. I have some friends who are doing NFBC this year, and they said, "What kind of bid do you think it's going to take to get him?" And I said, "Figure out what if you're the guy with the most money, figure out what the second place guy has and add a dollar and bid that."
Yeah.
I said, "This is the guy you save your FAB money for. So whatever format league you're in, if he's available and it's FAB bidding, spend what you have to spend. There will not be a bigger impact player available. Period."
Yeah, I mean, he was the number two prospect anyway, behind Buxton. And, you know, a lot of people would argue that it should have been, at worst, flipped because of Buxton's injury issues. But I guess the other side was, well, Correa may not be coming up this year because he's so young and this and that. I mean, it is still surprising that they took – and listen, give all the credit to Lunau and the organization to have the guts to make a move like this. I mean, it's not like he didn't earn it, but at the same time –
you know,
and Lowry not being there is a big factor in all this.
Yeah, I mean, if Lowry was healthy and had kept hitting, not like he was in the beginning. I mean, you know, he wasn't going to maintain a .432 on base percentage or whatever it was. But if Lowry was still healthy and productive, they could have taken their time. And my thinking was, look, as long as they're winning, they don't have to rush the guy. But that also sort of leads into, at a certain point, hey, we're winning. We're for real. We're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. We're going to put our best team on the field right now and let all that stuff go out the window.
Right.
They brought up Correa. They brought up Vincent Velasquez, who we'll talk about in a little bit. So when Lowry comes back, he could become a part-time DH, a part-time third baseman. He could become sort of this super utility guy. But if Correa is still hitting when Lowry comes back, I mean, it's his job to keep now. Is, you know, he doesn't have to ever go back to the minor leagues if he performs. It's, you know, this is it.
And we're getting a lot of this. I mean, Joey Gallo as well, yep. Who, you know, you haven't heard too much since the monster debut, but we'll see what happens there as well when Beltre gets back.
I mean, we've said this many times over the years that when a big name prospect calls up, he makes his own timeline. If he hits, he stays. If he doesn't, you know, look, Mike Trout didn't hit in his first cup of coffee with the Angels, mm-hmm. but they got a free look. They got to got to see where they were. If Correa doesn't hit, he can go back down and say, look, he's 20 years old. He needs a little more time. Mm-hmm. We can put Lowry back in there, blah, 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 blah. And if he hits, we don't need to send him back down. Right. So it's a no-lose situation for the Astros based on where they are right now in the standings and where Correa is in his development.
All right, and as far as who's next, I mean, we've talked about Corey Seager 100 times, and, you know, I think you said this or we were joking about it, but it's probably true that every time Rollins puts one out, he probably buys himself another week.
Yeah.
You know, even though it's the sum of the parts is not very impressive, he pops one here and there in a big spot, and the Dodgers are like, you know, all right, well, you know. I mean, you're messing with a guy who, you know, a veteran guy, and again, and you always say this every week, it seems like, the parts around this team are just insane. And with Puig back, and Puig is back.
Oh, my. The Dodgers.
You can kind of handle Rollins. See, you can hide him in a way.
Right. And that's the one difference between the situation with the Astros and the situation with the Dodgers. The Dodgers are winning, so they can say, hey, let's go for the throat.
Right.
But by the same token, Rollins is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
He's hitting a little bit better. He had a big three-run homer Tuesday night.
Yep.
You know, as long as they're winning and he's healthy and producing a little bit, they can allow Seager to sort of marinate a little bit more in AAA. Now, you look at Seager's AAA numbers at Oklahoma City, 292, four homers and 19 RBIs in 36 games. Overall, that looks pretty good. But most of that damage came in a four-game series at Salt Lake City. That's when he had the 6-for-6 game and everything else. You take out that four games at Salt Lake City, and his AAA numbers are okay, but nothing that screams out, get this guy up right now. So it's a different situation with him than it was with Correa. You know, you look at Byron Buxton, you know, doing okay, but he's still only in AA. As you said, he's got some injury risks. You know, the Twins are doing fine without him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they could use an upgrade in center field, but it's not like they're suffering. So I think he's a little further away. And then you look at Jose Peraza with the Braves, second baseman, high average, could steal a lot of bags. The Braves are kind of scuffling a little bit. That could be – Peraza could be the guy that comes up first. Doesn't have the same ceiling, but he could beat those other two guys because there's a little bit of a better fit with the club.
Yeah, I mean, if you have some room on your bench, even in the, especially in a non-keeper – I mean, listen, in the keeper league, a lot of these guys are gone for the most part. There's no reason for you not to draft one of these guys in the end game in a keeper league. So for the most part, they're gone. But in a daily non-keeper or a week, it doesn't matter, just a non-keeper you'd have to assume there's got to be somebody you can cut.
Yeah.
You're carrying a sixth outfielder or whatever. I mean, it's June 11th. It's not May anymore. It's you know, it's certainly not April anymore. You're getting to the point that the stashing is at its shortest point.
Yeah, you know, and again, I don't want to get into the crass business side, but the Super 2 line is more or less gone.
Yeah.
So now it's about performance and need and standing and all that stuff. So, for example, in Tout Wars, 15-team mix, non-keeper, six-man bench, I'm carrying Corey Seager on my bench right now.
Why not?
I cut Chris Owings. You know, I got a little bit of a roster crunch this week because I have some guys coming off the DL. Puig. And I decided, look, I'm going to go with... you know, I have Addison Russell actually on my bench this week. I picked up Mike Aviles. He's going to be sort of my five-position fill-in, but you got to play a guy when you pick him up. So for 1 week with three lefties, I play Aviles over Russell. And then next week, Russell goes back in, and Aviles is my insurance at every position, and Seager. So that's it. I mean, I'm basically not using a bench other than Mike Aviles, and that's enabling me to keep Corey Seager.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about, massaging the roster to make room for these guys as a stash.
Absolutely.
Well done. Good hard data to support my analysis.
And the nice thing is the Indians get to face three lefties this week, and Aviles kills lefties, and the Cubs are facing six righties, and Russell, you know, has been had a nice hot streak, but he's been struggling a little bit lately, so it's good timing for me to introduce Aviles onto my roster and give Russell a breather for a week, and then next week he's right back in and Aviles becomes my insurance policy.
You're platooning the crap out of those guys. Good for
you. Listen, you know, when you have a weak middle... When you drafted middle infield, is Scooter Jeanette, Jed Lowry, and Chris Owings, you have to be creative in your middle infield.
Chris Heston, he threw a no-hitter the other night. I don't know if you saw that. But on Tuesday night in Citi Field against what is just a terrible Mets lineup, got a nice no-hitter, struck out the side in the ninth, which to me is inexcusable. But whatever, right. That's neither here nor there. You know, it's funny. I had Heston. I doubt you would remember this, but in that 16-team mix I keep bringing up.
Yep.
I picked up Heston because he had a two-start week, and it was on the road. It was home, and I think it was like against the Rockies and Padres. It was just the stars were aligned, and he was coming off a good start. Whatever, I'm sure I'm off some here or there, and he did okay, you know. And I think I won that week, whatever. But then he fell back to earth, so I caught him. No big deal, whatever.
Right.
And the person I was going to pick up instead of him was Betts on the Rockies.
Yeah, Chad Bettis.
Bettis. How could I forget that name? Bettis. And he had gone on a run. So I was like, I just can't get this right. I give up, whatever.
That's pitching, man.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, it was pitching 101 on the wire. Anyway, pitcher ditch 101. But anyway, kind of forgot about him. And then I'm at the Yankee game Tuesday night for Tanaka Scherzer. Who would have thought that was the B game for the night in New York? And, you're getting the alerts. He's through six. I'm like, there's no shot. He's through seven. There's no shot. He's through eight. Okay, let's go to the bar. Yankees are up 6-1. The game was the game was over. And
Tanaka, 87 pitches through seven innings. How good does he look right now?
And he looks amazing. And I'll tell you what, that made it all the more impressive. The Harper homer.
Yeah,
that was an impressive home run. It wasn't far. It was like maybe 414 feet, but it's impressive.
Yeah. Anyway.
So anyway, we're neither here nor there. So so watching, and I'm just thinking back to April with this guy, and I had no idea he was a 27-year-old rookie.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, the thing is, he put up decent numbers in the minor leagues. You mentioned he was kind of hit and miss a little bit. He kind of fell back to earth. But I think including this no-hitter against the Mets, he's had seven starts where he's given up like 0, 1, or 2 runs. Yeah. And he's had five disaster starts where he's given up like 5 or more runs. So he's been erratic, but the overall numbers are very good. And this is the guy I wanted to talk about when we sort of teased the StatCast podcast. Matthew Gould, our intrepid VP of communications.
The Minister of Information.
We've been doing a little bit of research. One of the metrics that StatCast is providing that's really sort of had a lot of pickup in the early going, we're talking about spin rate. We're talking about perceived velocity, which looks at a pitcher's actual velocity. Right. And then adjusts it based on his release point compared to the league average. So a guy whose release point is further out in front, a long strider, a guy like that, will have a higher perceived velocity because even though the pitch speed is only this, the batter has less time to react, and it sort of adds late life to it, so to speak. Whereas a guy who's a short strider, who's got a short release point compared to the league average, that will reduce his perceived velocity because the batter has more time to react. Sure. So I'm going to give you two examples.
Give them.
Example of a guy who suffers in perceived velocity is Tyson Ross. He's very tall, but he's a short strider, and he kind of whips the ball. So even though he throws 95, 96, he loses a little bit. The one guy in baseball who gains the most in perceived velocity, qualified starter that Matt Gould and I found, Chris Heston.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who would have thunk
that?
Check
this out. Throws a sinker, about 89.5, 90. But he's 6'4", and he's a long strider, so he gains almost 1.5 to 2 miles an hour in perceived velocity.
Wow, pretty awesome.
So that means to a hitter, even though Heston's throwing 89.5, it looks like 91, 92.
Big difference.
Yeah, which is not dominating stuff, but with a lot of sink, he's got a slider, a curveball, and a changeup, two separate breaking balls and the change of pace. That makes it a lot harder. Now, the one thing we can't measure yet that we're starting to look at ways we might do this is deception. A 6'4 guy who's sort of driving out in front of you, if he can hide the ball, that thing sort of pops out, right? And then 92 with sink, you have less time to react. This guy's not a bad pitcher. Not a stud, but this guy's a good-looking pitcher. There's a lot to like here.
He's back on my radar. That's what a no-hitter will do. But, and one thing back to, the age, and a friend, and I learned this, years ago. But because of working here and probably because of, working so much with you, is when a guy is, I know Carlos Correa is 20 years old, whatever. I know he's a kid. But when guys just kind of come out of nowhere for a little bit, and you're like, I don't really know too much about this guy. The first thing you have to do is find out how old he is.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And I got a text message from a buddy of mine who plays fantasy baseball. He's really into it. And he's texting me all the time and asking me stuff. And he texts me about Joey Butler on the Rays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he goes, is this kid for real?
This 27-year-old
like,
kid.
Yeah, I said, well, and then I went and confirmed, that he's 20. Well, yeah, he might be 29,
yeah,
28.
Yeah, he was in the Cardinal system for a long time.
I said, not for nothing, but quad A, potentially.
Yeah, and you look at he's probably the one player in baseball right now who you look at his BABIP and say, like, all right, the cliff is coming.
Yeah.
I mean, what he's got, like a 30-2 strikeout to walk rate and a 440 batting average on balls in play.
That's unsustainable.
You think? but I think the difference with a pitcher, though, than a hitter, you make an excellent point there that, this is why I always used to tease you about Brandon Larson. Like,
right.
When you're dominating triple A, but you've been there for 4 years, you're supposed to dominate.
Sure.
It's a little bit different for a pitcher, I think, because a guy can do something with his repertoire and fundamentally change what he is as a pitcher. You can't, magically add 5 miles an hour to your fastball. But if you work on your mechanics and gain a little on that stride, and we looked at Brandon McCarthy before he got hurt, putting on a lot of weight, focusing on adding strength and adding velocity, changing your repertoire, emphasizing one pitch over another pitch, that can make a difference. So I think with pitchers, you're a little bit more inclined to say, all right, maybe it won't last. Maybe he's going to turn back into a pumpkin. But for 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 starts, and that's what we look for. I mean, the Fantasy 401 strategy is not based on Mr. Right. It's based on Mr. Right now when it comes to pitching. So why not Heston?
Yeah. And
could he be Charlie Morton? Yeah. It's not the worst thing in the world.
Not the worst thing in the world. Charlie Morton was drafted in a majority of leagues, I would think.
Charlie Morton, 12-team
mix and hunt.
Dominated last night.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he was fantastic last night. So, and again, opportunity. If Matt Cain's healthy, Chris Heston is not throwing a no-hitter in Citi Field on Tuesday.
Right.
And we're not talking about him. And you're not looking up his,
Perceived velocity.
You
go. You'll learn the lingo.
No, I knew. I just had a brain for it. I know what it. Trust me. Get out of here.
I trust you.
Beat it.
I trust you.
All right. Some time for some closer follies. Cue up the Calypso music. There it is. And yes, I know it's Calliope.
I know. That's why I put a little Calypso beat on it.
I was telling the listeners, not you.
That's right.
I know. We're here. So Andrew Miller, out of nowhere. It's funny. Din Man, the boss. He calls me and he goes, how come he has Andrew Miller on a couple teams? And he goes, how come Andrew Miller didn't pitch? And I'm like, well, I know these guys don't pitch 3 days in a row because Girardi said so. That's why Betances didn't pitch. I was like, but I don't think Miller pitched on
Tuesday.
He did pitch on Tuesday.
He got the final out, I believe, on Tuesday.
Yeah, he did pitch on Tuesday. I was like, but it didn't matter. The Yankees were off on Monday. Mm-hmm. So it didn't matter. And then, like, a second later, the alert came out that he wanted a deal. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And I'm looking. I'm like, where did this happen?
Apparently, and I haven't seen it, so this is hearsay, but yeah. I encourage everybody to go back and check the video.
Mm-hmm.
I think he pitched. He got the last out of Tanaka's win on Tuesday night.
Yep.
And apparently, at one point, was seen rubbing his arm.
Yeah,
kind of
he did a
little
reaction
flinch
after he flinged one.
Yeah.
He kind of, like, it looked like he kind of short-armed one. Because maybe he got hurt as it was coming out.
Yeah.
And he, like, you saw him wince a little bit.
Yeah. So, okay, good.
Innocuous at the time.
Right. And he only faced one batter, so it's not like he was out there really struggling. It was over so quickly.
And the game was over, right.
Yeah. Exactly. So, right now they're saying it's a strained muscle. The thing I worry about with forearm, and I don't want to be, a doom and gloom guy and say that Andrew Miller's going for Tommy John surgery. I am not saying any of that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times when you hear about, strain muscle or strain flexor tendon in the forearm, it's a precursor to an elbow injury.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think the Yankees are being extra cautious on this.
Ridiculously cautious.
Boom. Right. I mean, there's a guy who's had some arm problems earlier in his career, not lately, but earlier in his career. And the other reason they can afford to be cautious is that Dellin Betances, if he were an everyday closer, would probably be viewed as the number one closer in baseball. Let me give you a couple of numbers. Why? Last year, which was an unbelievable year for Dellin Betances, he averaged 13.5 strikeouts per nine inning. This year, he's averaging 15 strikeouts per nine innings. I mean, that's record-challenging stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In 32 and a third innings, he's allowed 11 hits. Mm-hmm. 11, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
11 of them. he's got like a .30-something whip. So if you were to tack 40 saves on top of those numbers, it would be Craig Kimbrell's best year plus some.
Right.
So Betances will take over as the closer. The Yankees have shuffled through a lot of setup and short relievers this year. I assume they'll figure out the bridge between Carpenter and,
Justin Wilson, they got Lindgren, and they got
there you go.
Guys.
They'll piece it together.
Yeah, they'll piece it together.
But, I mean, Betances is gone in every single league. There's not a league where he's a free agent. So really, your only strategy right now is enjoy it while it lasts. And if you have an if you're an Andrew Miller owner, hope that it's only a 3 or 4 week thing and the muscle inflammation goes away and he comes back. I mean, look, two starts is not proof, but they handled it very well with Tanaka. You know, we've seen other guys in the past, it's muscle inflammation or tendonitis or something, and they come back. So hopefully by getting him onto the DL quickly, that precludes it turning into something else.
And by the way, David Carpenter will not be part of that.
Well, he got sent down recently.
He just got traded to the Nationals.
Well, there you go.
Literally 30 seconds ago.
Oh, my God. Except by the time
breaking news.
By the time people are hearing this, they'll be like, dude, that was yesterday.
From the Washington Bureau. Yeah, they have acquired him for minor league infielder Tony Renda.
Okay.
Let's see. Renda.
Is that Tony Rendon's brother?
No, it's Renda. 24, second-round selection in the 2012 draft. Hmm. Right-handed second baseman. Blah,
all right.
Blah, blah.
Yankees.
He was in the Arizona Fall League.
Yankees could be looking for a second baseman down the road.
Yeah. 267, 333 on base percentage. There you go. All right. Double A. All
utility right. Players of America.
Breaking news. Breaking news talking about closer follies. Mix the music. We got to mix it. We need to do a mix of the breaking news bulletin music and the
Calypso music.
The Calliope Calypso music.
We'll have a 411 mixtape.
Okay, so then elsewhere, let's go all the way out to the Pacific Northwest, shall we? Carson Smith, kind of, sort of. Replaces Fernando Rodney as the Mariners' closer. I'm gonna miss the arrows. I'll be honest.
Yeah, you know, Lloyd McLennan insists. You know, look, Fernando Rodney has a 7.03 ERA. He's walked 12 guys in 24 and a third innings, and Lloyd McLennan keeps insisting this guy's our closer. We need to get him right. We don't want to disrupt anything else by making a change. And then I believe it was Tuesday night or maybe Monday. Smith gets the save, and then McLennan, and then comes out and gets the save again, I think, on Tuesday. I might be a little off on my timeline here. But McLennan starts hedging it, saying, look, Rodney's still our guy. We just need to get him worked out. It's some mechanical problems. You know, he's basically repeating the same things, even though he's made the structural change of making Smith the closer. Last night, Wednesday night, Rodney mopped up in the ninth inning. You know, he pitched the ninth. They were up by seven. Mm-hmm. So he cleaned up. But, you know, their intention is to put Rodney back in as the closer. That would seem to be what McLennan is saying. But here's the thing, and we've made this point a million times, so let's do it a million and one times.
Do it one more time.
When a closer loses the job for performance reasons, two things have to happen for him to get the job back. Number one, he's got to earn it. So if Rodney keeps pitching to a 7 ERA, he's not going to earn it back. Number two, the guy who is the placeholder, and that's now Carson Smith, he's got to give it back. If Carson Smith runs off 10 straight saves, Rodney ain't getting that job back, okay? That's what we're seeing now in Texas. Yep. It's over. Sean Tolleson's the closer.
Yep.
That's what we're seeing in Miami. Boom, done. Ramos is the closer, even with the blown save against Toronto. E5, baby. Interesting change also in Tampa Bay. We talked about that one last time. Brad Boxberger had a couple of struggling outings. Last night, Wednesday night, Boxberger pitches the eighth. Now, again, it was the middle of the lineup with, you know, Trout and Pujols. And McGee comes back in and gets the ninth. So Boxberger, with a couple of struggles and maybe the circumstances, at least opened the door now for McGee to try and push in there. So that's a very different circumstance than what we may be seeing here, because Rodney has to outpitch Smith from here on out, and I don't think it's going to happen.
We'll see. You've been right so far. You were right with Soria. You've been right so far. You were right.
I was
with
right
Ramos.
With Grilly. I was right with yep. Soria. I was right with Ramos.
No, you're
I'm going to be right with Tolleson.
You're on fire.
I mean, look, you know, Ron Chandler said this 30 years ago. Chase the skills, right?
Right.
These guys have the best skills, and now they're in the job where that enhances their value of those skills.
Very good point.
So there you go.
All right.
So hat tip to Ron Chandler. Go to ChandlerPark.com. New leagues forming every day.
Rock and roll. last thing on the closers. The rumors are wild and furious that Papelbon is on his way out the door in Philly. And it's just a question of, does he go to the Cubs, who, by the way, signed Rafael Soriano, mm-hmm. untuck, to a minor league deal, or the Blue Jays? So which closer in one of these cities should be the most nervous?
Well, you know, the Cubs bullpen is already up in the air.
Yeah. Mike got a save the other
you know,
day, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Rendon got pulled out of a save situation, and Pedro Strop came in and got the save. And then the next night, Strop got pulled out, and Mott came in and got the save. And now they've signed Rafael Soriano, who frankly wasn't very good last year, but, you know, veteran C,
right.
has pitched for Joe Maddon before in Tampa Bay. So they're sort of building up a collection of arms, and like, we're just going to figure it out as we go. Papelbon would be a clear-cut slam dunk closer there. Mm-hmm. The Blue Jays have had some bullpen problems, but Brett Cecil's pitched pretty well. He just hasn't had a lot of save chances. Liam Hendricks has been effective as a setup guy. So either way, Papelbon would be the slam dunk closer in either of those places. Yep. It's really just a question of which team blinks first. The thing that's interesting to me is who's going to be the Phillies closer, because Ken Giles, who everybody assumed mm-hmm. was the closer in waiting, hasn't really been that good this year.
I picked him up as a flyer, very like maybe my last pick in a draft. I've just been hanging on to him just because I could. It's a deep bench. It's not like he's awful. It's just that, but he's not inspiring confidence at the same time.
He's not Dylan Betances.
Well, know. No, but who is? But at the same time,
he's not
time,
AJ Ramos.
But at the same time, if you're cleaning house, and obviously the Phillies, you know, aren't going anywhere, but at the same time, they still do have high priced talent, Papelbon being one of them. Once you do that, I mean, you've pretty much automatically raised the white flag on the season, and you can do anything you want, and it still would behoove the Phillies to give Giles that job.
Good use of behoove. I like that. Right. A quick note about Papelbon. You know, this is a guy that for the last 3 or 4 years, those of us in the fantasy community have been sort of shying away from him, expecting him to fall apart. This year, career low velocity, averaging 91 on the fastball. But as a result, career high usage on the slider, and he's getting a career high ground ball rate. He's transitioning and transforming himself as a pitcher to great, great success. I mean, averaging better than 10 strikeouts per inning. I mean, he's been per nine innings. I'm sorry, he's been fantastic. So, you know, I'm a person that's been skeptical about his value as a closer because I'm afraid of that blow up. And you just gave me a nice compliment. I've been wrong about Papelbon. He's been very effective, and I think we have to give credit to a pitcher who. We just said it about Heston. You don't have to be the hardest thrower in the world to be effective, and Papelbon is effectively making that transition from a hard thrower to a pitcher, and has been at least as effective in doing so, and that's really a tribute to him as a pitcher.
All right. Some more breaking news. Pretty much expected, but let's make it official. Will Myers is back for the San Diego Padres with that left wrist tendonitis. He's been reinstated. The person getting sent down is Kevin Quackenbush.
Yeah, and they sent down Jed Jerko the other day. Much to the chagrin of Nando DeFino. Yeah. Here's the interesting thing for me about Myers coming back. You know, he was their leadoff guy and was doing very well, and I assume he'll get that job back.
You would think so.
Will Venable played lights out in Myers' absence and is their best defensive outfielder on the roster right now. Matt Kemp has been terrible.
Terrible.
Does Venable start to steal playing time from Matt Kemp?
That'd be amazing.
You know, I mean, they've got to find a way to keep their hitters in there who are performing, and Venable has outperformed Kemp. They've got to do something about their outfield defense, which has not been good. Yep. Venable can help there. You know, I don't think they're going to bench Kemp, but could he start bleeding at bats? I think that's a real concern if you're a Matt Kemp fantasy owner.
And some quick soft analysis for you, because I know you love soft analysis.
Yeah.
You know, Bud Black basically managing for his job. You know, he is. I mean, he's not AJ Preller's guy. There was no reason to necessarily get rid of him coming into the year, but Bud Black did not say, give me three outfielders that none of them can play center. I mean, obviously that's
none of them can play the outfield,
but you know, they backed themselves into a corner here with this, and we'll see how it works out. Myers getting hurt didn't help except make it a little bit more cloudy now, like, which is what you basically just said. So we'll see what happens. Real quick, three real quick notes, and then we'll go to the Twitter machine before we wrap this up. Matt Holliday, unfortunately, with that weird quad strain and that kind of awkward play, he is now on the DL. My boy Randall Grichuk, who homered yesterday, I believe.
Yep, he sure did.
On Wednesday. I'm a fan of his, and in NL only I have him, so I'm happy about that, even though you hate to see guys get hurt.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm glad he got the opportunity.
Grichuk is definitely the big winner in this one. He's going to be in there Grichuk will be in there almost every single day. You'll probably see a three-man outfield primarily.
Well, you always see a three-man outfield.
Primarily consisting of Grichuk in left, Jay in center, and Hayward in right. But Peter Borjos is stealing a lot of playing time in center and right. So it's almost like a four-man rotation at this point. But definitely great news for Grichuk. Holliday, they say it's a bad injury. He could be out 6 weeks or more.
No,
Big-time injury after losing Matt Adams.
Yep. Well, somehow, that's okay. The Cardinals will be just fine. Somehow they always are. It's bizarre.
Probably right.
God bless them. Hunter Pence... may go on the DL with lingering pain in that left wrist. So another left wrist here with just like Will Myers, who's coming back from that.
Yeah, shame. He's been productive, 13 RBIs in 18 games. Justin Maxwell is going to soak up a lot of that playing time.
Homered off Matt Harvey last
night. He did. Maxwell is one of those guys that in daily leagues, when you see the Giants playing a lefty, pick him up and get him in there. He crushes lefties.
Speaking of a lefty who crushes, and we've talked about this a lot. I mean, because I told you I was all in on this guy this year. And Joey Votto goes out and has himself a Tuesday.
Yep, he sure did. Three ding-a-lings against the Phillies. I'm glad I drafted him in the Gotham Diamond District League. I have Encarnacion, Votto, and Rizzo were three of my first four purchases. So 10 minutes into the draft, I'd locked in my utility and my corner.
It's okay.
And they're all producing, so it's great. Just to give you a comp, Joey Votto this year, .299 batting average, .403 on base percentage, .555 slugging. In 2011, the year after his insane MVP, or we're not going to compare to that, .309, .416, .531. That year he had 29 homers, 103 RBIs, and topped 100 runs. That's a long way of saying he's having a year that fits in with his best seasons of his career, minus his crazy career year.
Gotcha. All right, lightning round. Real quick lightning question from me, from @thecapped23. Should I be worried about Matt Harvey?
I believe you should be. He's given up 7 runs twice in his last 4 outings. He's already given up as many home runs as he did last year. You know, pitchers come and go, you know, through these kind of struggles, but it shouldn't be surprising for any pitcher to struggle at some point, and you have to be concerned about it. I don't know what the problem is.
Well, definitely not velocity.
Yeah.
He hit 99.
He has not been commanding.
He basically admitted, he's like, I didn't know where it was going.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, in a way, the way I felt about it was like, you know, you go out and no matter how good you are at golf, there are going to be some days you just can't play. And he's just had one of those stretches where he's in a funk, not a Tiger Woods funk, hopefully, but a funk nonetheless.
That being said, I think he's a good enough pitcher. And as you said, we think he's healthy.
Yeah.
The velocity is still there. The stuff is still there. He still pitches in the favorable ballpark. I think he's one of those guys you're going to hang with him and keep playing him. I mean, if they go to Coors, all right, I don't know the schedule, but maybe you sit him there.
I don't know.
At home, you're going to start him.
Yeah, of course.
But can we stop with the Happy Harvey Day hashtag? I mean, come on, give it up.
It's kind of fizzled a little bit, but we'll see. I mean, he can go on just as sick as a run the other way, and everything's fine.
He's no Charlie Morton, I'll tell you
that. But his ERA is closer to 4 than it is 3. It was a little surprising to see. 7.20 ERA in his last 4 starts, 8 homers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he throws hard.
Yeah, he does.
But he throws it flat and straight. It's going to go boom.
Yeah.
It's going to go bye-bye.
What I've read, and again, you know, I've seen him pitch a little bit, but I'm not a scout, is that he hasn't really had good definition on his breaking ball. You know, he throws a slider and a curve. Mm-hmm. When he came up, they would sort of muddle together. Mm-hmm. And then when he really hit his stride 2 years ago before he got hurt, those pitches really had a lot of clear definition. I think they're sort of starting to muddle together again. That could be a mechanical problem. You know, it could be a lot of different things, but the stuff is there. So, you know, you would assume that he'll come out of this.
And last thing on this, a scout also said that he's not pushing people off the plate. That guys are getting very comfortable, and the Giants looked extremely comfortable last night.
Giants are a good offense.
No,
very
good
underrated
it's,
offense.
It's not to knock them, but
no, I know what you mean.
Any major league lineup is comfortable in the box.
Yeah.
And you're flat. It doesn't matter how hard.
I was having this conversation with Tom Trudeau in our biz dev department, who plays in a lot of dynasty leagues. Yeah. Don't sleep on the Giants. I mean, this, you know, a year ago, this was a pick on offense.
Mm-hmm.
Belt has emerged. Brandon Crawford has emerged. Posey's having another awesome year. Aoki and Pagan setting the table are getting the job done. This is an above average offense. You can't treat them as a pitch or ditch pick on offense.
Yep. All right, let's go to the tweets. Now, this is lightning round.
All right.
So respect it. Because you spent way too much time talking about @thecap23's question.
Okay.
@AaronDono34, trade Donaldson for King Felix. Will Donaldson slow down?
No, I would not do this deal. Donaldson's an elite hitter. He's enjoying that new ballpark. His OPS at home, 340 points higher than on the road. Wow. And everything he's doing, other than some good luck on batting average and balls in play, fits in with what he's done in his career. King Felix is elite, but so is Donaldson. I'm not trading him.
I agree. @IronMetalRoses.
Iron Metal.
I am Iron Metal Roses. Who's the best DL stash? Morrow, Kane, Moore, Latos, Paxton?
I don't know. I'm Paxton?
Well, put it this way. Who's the best pitcher? Forget about that they're all hurt. Who's the best pitcher here? You don't think it's Moore?
I think Matt Moore will probably be back soonest.
Mm-hmm.
Go with Matt Moore.
I think Matt
Listen,
Moore.
You know, these are all crapshoot guys. These are all lotto tickets. Matt Moore.
Moore's a little bit more handy, but
Moore.
Yeah, okay.
You'll win more with Moore.
You'll win more and more. @TheSwagKing, 1738. I have tons of outfielders, but I'm struggling at third. Trade Gardner, Sandoval, and Ziegler for Ethier and Rendon?
don't know. I've mixed feelings about this one. You know, Sandoval's having an okay but not a great year. Ethier is an everyday player right now, but maybe isn't going to be all year long. So you think of it almost as Gardner, you know, Gardner and Ziegler for Rendon. I guess that's okay, but you have to be confident that Rendon's going to come back and play at that level he did last year, and you don't know if there are any lingering issues with that knee. So I get where you're going with this. I don't think it's a bad deal, but I just have a little bit of concern that you're giving up this much to get a guy whose performance is uncertain.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Honestly, I'd rather see you give up a little bit less for Kyle Seager.
That's what I was going to say, yeah. Just go next down and just get something a third.
Yeah, just trade Gardner straight up for Seager.
Yeah.
And then keep the closer.
Okay. Next one is at Dan Radin. Trade Goldie.
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It was Goldie and Quintana for Tex, Bryant, and McHugh.
If this is a dynasty keeper league, I'm still not doing it because Goldie, I mean, if it was assumed that Gardner, that Trout was the number one pick this year, is it not reasonable to assume next year that if the season ended today, Goldschmidt would be the number one pick?
Unbelievable.
Because he's better than Trout in every category?
Mm-hmm. I know.
Seriously.
I'm not disagreeing.
I
could have had him. Took McCutcheon instead. I did get Votto.
You can't feel bad about that. We've said many times you should be willing to trade any player if it'll make your team better by doing so. To me, this is not a guarantee make your team better because you're leaving out who's the third baseman you're benching to make room for Bryant.
Right.
I mean, it's a nice return. It's a fair offer, but I'm not trading Goldschmidt.
I agree. At CJAX 027, Adrian Gonzalez and Brett Gardner for Joey Bats and Sonny Gray. Who wins?
I think it's a pretty fair value deal. I'd probably lean towards the Gonzalez-Gardner side, but if you need a starter, I do think Sonny Gray is legit. Joey Bats, it's not like he's terrible. You're getting a lot of pop there, and he's getting healthier and getting better. I think it's a fair value deal. I like the bats, but it's fair.
Yeah, that's a very good deal. And I agree. I mean, if I'm going to have to take on the bat, the arm, and it's Sonny Gray, I feel a lot better. At Philliam Kessel, Cespedes or Springer rest of the way?
If you are desperate for speed, you're definitely going for Springer. If you're desperate for power, you'll probably stick with Cespedes because of the greater RBI potential. But all things being equal, I would take Springer. Cespedes right now, a lot of his production is propped up by a .358 batting average on balls in play. I looked this morning, so I know what the number is. That's going to come down about 40 or 50 points. That means the average is going to drop and the RBIs are going to go with it. Springer, 8 homers, 19 RBIs, 13 steals, 27 runs. His batting average isn't going to get much better, but he's going to give you all the other production and a lot of speed. I like that all-around production.
Yeah, scratch, no matter what, I think scratch Springer will always go ahead of Cespedes the rest of the way,
right.
Number one. And number two, Cespedes' year being a success is tied to his average, which, like you just mentioned, is probably not sustainable.
Right, probably going to drop.
All right. At Sultani Panda, should I trade Joey Bats and J.D. Martinez for Stanton and Wieters?
Yeah, we just talked about Joey Bats, so now he's going off in another trade. Joey Bautista to Stanton is a step up. It's not a huge step up, but it's clearly a step up.
Yep.
Martinez to Wieters, you have to think, is a step down a little bit. But Martinez, frankly, hasn't been great for the last 20 or 30 days. I like this trade. I think it's fair value. I would take the Stanton side because he's the best player. And even with all of his struggles and the strikeouts and everything, leading the major leagues in home runs, and we know what this guy can do when he gets hot, power is the commodity you have to get. You have to get power. So I would do this deal.
You must have the power.
You need the power.
All right.
On that note,
that'll do it for another edition of the MLB.com Fantasy 411 Podcast Showgram Extravaganza. To Corey Schwartz, The Fink, The Goose, Fred Zinke, of course, Jonathan Mayo at Jonathan Mayo B3. Thanks for hopping on and talking a little draft with us. And as always, to the great Americans on the other side of the glass.
The true patriots of the Fantasy 411.
I'm Mike Ciano, and this has been the MLB.com Fantasy 411 for June 11th, 2015, year of our Lord, 1AB.